Good morning. You don't mind if I don't wear my sport jacket? They get to be a nuisance after a while. How is everybody this year? This may be my 10th or 11th year coming in August. I don't know. But it's the way I mark my year. This is the end of my year. And in September starts the whole new shebang of September, winter, and spring. So this is the way I mark my year. And it's been a good year, and it'll be a good ending to the year. I might mention we still take a team to Los Angeles every year, and there'll be an article in Uplook or Uplook Pioneer. I don't know how many get the magazine, but anyway, there'll be an article in it about our step team. We've had 25 kids from out of the state of California the last 2 years. That is the limit we wanted, and we were able to get them. And we've been seeing some nice results helping some of the assemblies in California. Now, what we do is go to assemblies that are trying to grow and are hanging on, and tell them we would like to start a Spanish meeting in part of their chapel because the Latinos are all over. And then we train the kids in Latin culture and paintboards and doing things public to share the gospel, and these chapels are growing. And what happens is that many of the Latino young people speak fluent English, and they go over to the English part. So what we've been seeing is growth, and it's been working well. So you may read something about it in Uplook magazine if you get Uplook magazine. When I was in Bible school many, 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 many years ago, you know, Lance Latham, Doc Latham, was one of my teachers. Most of you young people don't know who was. He was the founder of Wana Clubs. And Dr. William McCarroll was one of my teachers. And Dr. McCarroll was a great teacher on Romans and Revelation and Daniel. And I met a number of old-timers, too. Clarence Jones, the founder of HCJB. And all of this is beyond most of these young people, of course. But when we were in Bible school, we had some great teachers. And we were interested in learning something about the new subject of the time, psychology. And in those days, hardly any Bible schools had it. I don't even know if seminaries had it. I'm talking about the late 50s, early 60s. But we wanted to know something about psychology. What we wanted to know is about people. We want to know about people. What makes them tick and problems and how we can help, and we wanted to know a few things. And one of my teachers said, well, we don't have room for that subject in our curriculum, but if you want to know about human nature, if you want to know about problems, if you want to know about people and how people function and what makes them function, read the Pentateuch. Particularly spend time in Genesis, a lot of time in Exodus, a lot of time in Numbers and Deuteronomy. Now, Leviticus is a little over our head, but they said, anyway, these four out of the five. And read and see how people react and live and how things go on inside of people so that people can be helped by the Lord. So I spent a lot of time in those chapters, and sure enough, if you read Exodus, you read about the Israelites and a number of things that are very interesting. I'm going to throw out some verses. There's no need to turn to them because I'm going to have some verses later. But in Exodus chapter 3, verses 7 and 8, God announces deliverance. Moses is going to deliver them. And he announces deliverance. I'm going to free you from the Egyptians, and I'm going to take you to a land. And I'm going to put you in that land. And one of the things that immediately happened after the good news came to them was that they had a severe trial. Pharaoh said, look, these people are lazy. They think too much about religion. Let's make them work hard. Let's keep their minds on work, so we're not going to give them straw to make bricks. And immediately, the people began to complain against Moses. The daily grind, as I call it, the daily grind was wearing them out, and they forgot the promises of God. They forgot that God said, I will take you out, and I will take you in. And then in Exodus chapter 14, after they were miraculously delivered from Egypt, they were brought to the Red Sea, and they were trapped. You've heard this before, I'm sure. You've been in Sunday school. They were kind of trapped. Here's the Red Sea, and here's the hills, and back here is Pharaoh's army, and they complained at the Red Sea, and God showed a remarkable miracle, doing something that all of us would love to see. I mean, it would just be awesome to watch the Lord part a lake, walk through it. So it would be awesome. And in chapter 15 of Exodus, there's a song of praise, a long song. And they danced and they sang and they praised the Lord for deliverance. And the last line of that praise song was, He shall live forever and ever. Sounds like something out of the book of Revelation. And then it says God led them from there into the wilderness 3 days. Now, mind you, 3 stinking days. And the first thing they do when they get out there, and they don't have their fill of water, is they start complaining. 3 days after. The enemy loves to get after us, and our emotions definitely fluctuate. We need a steady walk with God. We need to learn from things that he has done in the past. But we need to bear in mind that those things that he's done in the past ought to reflect the present. I'm going to take you out of the land and take you in. 3 days after this miracle, they started complaining. And they said, there is no water, and how soon you and I forget the things that God has done for us. Chapter 16, there was no food, and they complained. And they kept complaining to Moses, you have brought us out here to die. That's not the first time they said that. You brought us out here to die. And Moses prayed to God, and God gave them water and food. He gave them manna. A little while after that, they need water, and they quarrel with Moses. Now, these people are basically complainers. They're always complaining about what they want and they don't have. They're always complaining about their expectations and what God isn't doing to meet their needs at a particular time. They're complainers. And in their complaints, they often attack Moses. Well, when you read that and you read it again and again, you begin to realize that their attack is not really against Moses, it's anger with God. But we won't say that. We never say, I'm angry at God. So we pick somebody out around us and we say, you're the problem for my unhappiness. You're the problem for what I'm not getting. And Numbers chapter 11 talks about a mixed multitude that lacked food. And God said, well, I'll send you quail. And so he sent them some meat. They demanded of God, give us meat. He sent them meat. And it says in the scriptures, this is humorous, while the meat was still in their teeth. In other words, before they had time to do the dental flossing and clean out, they got an upset stomach. And they all got sick. The meat obviously wasn't very good. And they all got sick. They had their fill of it. And they got sick and they were to learn. Then they get to Kadesh, which is on the one side of Jordan, and they're to enter the land. And when they get to Kadesh, there's other problems besides not having any water. And they get angry again. And they say, why have you brought us here? Now, they're almost in the promised land, for goodness sake. An 11-day walk, and they'll spend 40 years there, because they would not trust God. And at Kadesh, they had no water. And they were mad at Moses, and they attacked Moses. And Moses struck the rock twice. God said, strike the rock like before, and water will come up. Moses struck it twice. He lost his temper. And God said to Moses, you're not going in the land. I expected more of you at this time. It's an interesting story. It's an interesting story even how in a person like Moses, all of the stress brought him to a place where suddenly he had a poor testimony. And he struck the rock twice. And God says, you're to be different before these people. Well, there's a lot of things that go on. Finally, in Deuteronomy, they get to the land, and you know the story. They send in spies. And the spies come back and complain. But one thing most of us don't realize is that they were not supposed to send in spies. When they got there, God says, enter the land. Well, maybe we should see what's over there first, say. And God says, I'll give them permission. But they were not really to send out spies. Spies was really a lack of faith. They would enter. That's where they were going. And you know the story. They come back and they complain and they bellyache about what's going on. And they're discouraged and they discourage other people. And they have this what is called the grasshopper complex. You can add that to your psychology book, what they call a grasshopper complex. I'm too small, and we're like grasshoppers in their sight, and what are we going to do, and how are we going to win this thing? And so they looked at the obstacles, and they didn't go in the land. Israel was doing two things that are very, very common among us. One, complaining. Now, I'm a complainer. All right, I'll tell you right off. It's easier for me to bellyache. I'm a complainer. And the next thing they did was criticism. And I want to talk next week about criticism. And so you can stay home if you want or whatever. We're going to talk about criticism. But they complained and they criticized. They both go together. When you start complaining that things aren't going the way you want them to go, you start criticizing. Now, if you're in a church and things aren't going the way you want them to go, you attack the leaders. And a lot of time, the leaders have to make changes. I've been an elder for 31 years, and I'm going to be leaving the oversight in November. 31 years is enough. That's where the wrinkles come from and all that stuff. But I know how it is with people coming. And when they attack us like they did Moses, sometimes we're wrong. But sometimes they're so frustrated about their own lives, they just have to attack someone. So complaining. And later on, Moses' sister and brother complained. And they complained about Moses' wife. She was an Ethiopian, a Cushite. And he had another wife, Zipporah, but they complained about this. And it was just a ruse. They didn't have to complain about her. She did nothing. What they were really doing is jealous of Moses' authority. So they found something in his life. Let me see. Ah, right there, see. Makes you unqualified. And they attack something. If you're a complainer, you will always find something to attack. I can tell you right off. You will always find something. And I call myself a very pickable person. I'm easy to pick on. I've been around a long time, boy, and people at Wauwatosa Chapel, if they want to find something to pick on, they can do it. Doesn't take long, see. But they attacked them. Complaining and criticism go together. And then after that, there were other things. Korah. And Korah came to Moses, and Korah had a high position. He wasn't the high priest, but he had a high position. And he came to Moses, and he said, you think you know it all. But actually, Moses hit the nail on the head. Moses said, no, the problem is this. You want to be the high priest. Moses nailed him. say, what you really want to do is have a position that God has not qualified you for. But they did some attacking. So let's talk a little bit about complaining. Complaining today, right? Now, in the New Testament, there are verses in 1 Corinthians chapter 10. There are verses that talk about these very portions. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he talks about the people in the wilderness. For I do not want you to be unaware, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. All right, they all had the same experiences. Cloud, the sea, and all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and the sea. And all ate the same spiritual food. Being baptized means they were identified with God's purpose that God had for Moses and the nation. They all had these experiences. And all drank the same spiritual drink, for they were drinking from spiritual rock that followed them. Nevertheless, with most of them, God was not well pleased, for they were laid low in the wilderness. Now, these things happen as examples for us. That's why these books are so important, young people. Read them. And when you read these Old Testament stories, ask yourself questions. What's going on in this man's mind? Why is he complaining? Why is he doing what he's doing? And you'll find that often there's a revelation or verse there that shows that the man is either frustrated or jealous or wants something for himself. And 1 Corinthians then tells us they're written for our example. They're written for us and our example. He talks about verse 8, let us act immorally as some did. And let us not try the Lord as some did when they were destroyed by the serpent, trying to learn about food and his guidance. And then Philippians chapter 2, and we'll talk about that later, as well as the chapter 4, 3 and 4 in Hebrews. Talks about, now, do not harden your hearts as the day of provocation. Interesting. Hebrews 3 and 4 uses this phrase at least four times. That's on the writer's mind. Don't let the difficulties harden your heart and mind toward God. Don't let your difficulties harden your heart so that you will not respond to leadership or you will not respond to God. Keep your heart right. All right? One of the things I notice about complaining is that complaining can become a habitual response to stress and difficulties. It's a habitual response. Things are difficult. Things are hard. They had danger at the Red Sea. Many times it happened. There was danger at the Red Sea. There was problems before they entered the land. There were dangers. There were shortages of food, water, comforts. And there was also the inconveniences of living in the wilderness. The inconveniences of constantly moving. The inconveniences of packing up and going. The inconvenience of always having to pray that God would supply their needs. But complaining is a habitual response to stresses, to difficulty, to circumstances, right? And so it happens a lot. And often they long to be back in Egypt. Now, that's nonsense. Did they really want to be back in Egypt? Or did they just want things to go a little easier? But the longing to be back in Egypt is nonsense. Now, boy, before I became a Christian, things were... That's nonsense. Because they know that God saved them out of Egypt and he had a plan. They just were having a hard time trusting him. And this, I think, is important. The pressures of the moment, they could not focus on the real cause of their problem. What's the real cause of their problem? Moses? No. The real cause was a lack of trust in God. And that is something that is really important for us to get. They could only think of the quickest way of escape, the quickest way out. They weren't thinking of the consequences. They were just thinking that God isn't being fair, and it was a lack of trust in God. And they spent a lot of time criticizing Moses about that. So when pressures come, resist the temptation to look for the easiest way out, especially if it leads to sin and disobedience. Be careful about looking for the easiest way out. And I think young people are faced with that pressure today, no doubt, in a world where so many things have changed and so many things are approved and many things aren't shunned and many things aren't even seen as sin. And I think that's important. So resist the temptation. Here's what you need to do instead. Focus on God's power. What has God done for me? Well, for Israel, he opened the Red Sea. And for Israel, he let them enter the land. What's he done for us? Freed me from the power of sin. Go back, you people who before you were saved, and think about the things. The power of God. And the power of God is displayed in these books when God wishes to display the power, not when we demand. God is powerful. And getting them out of Egypt, wow. So it is incredible to see his power. God can do anything. The other thing is focus on God's wisdom. Does he know what he's doing? See, I mean, does he know what he's doing? Say, can he remove obstacles? Those things that are in my way, and I say, that thing or that person is keeping me from experiencing everything Christ wants for me. That's not true. Because I've experienced that myself, where there were people that seemed to be against me, that seemed to be in my way. And I focused on them instead of God. And then I found out that nothing could stop God from opening the door for me. Nothing. So, focus on God's wisdom. Can he remove obstacles? Does he know the way to lead us? You know, when Israel was at the Red Sea, they didn't know. And you know what I'm going to talk about here. But they didn't know that God actually led them there to spare them something that would have defeated them. What was it? He could have led them the short route the way the Philistines. But what does Scripture say? They did not yet know how to fight. In other words, it would be like a brand new believer who was inexperienced in battling with the enemy, the devil. And God led them there. And they thought it was hard and mean. And actually, God was sparing them from being defeated by another people. Does God know how to lead us? Does he know the way? And the last question is, can he supply our needs? Can he meet those needs? So they complained, and complaining with Israelites became a habit. Examine yourself. Are you in the habit of complaining? Complaining about what you want to have and don't have. Complaining about people. Complaining about the fact that God just doesn't seem to be doing for you what he's doing for other people. It becomes a habit, and it's a terrible habit. Complaining. Now, some complaints are valid. It says in Numbers chapter 11... Verses 1 to 7 and 11 to 7 and 11 to 11, it says some complaints are valid. Here's what I mean by that. Israel complained and Moses complained. What's the difference? It says in chapter 11 of Numbers that Israel complained to one another. Now, when you complain to one another, it's like a virus. You infect this one. Yeah, I think you're right. These guys, I know. And then you complain. I'm like, I know what you're saying, man. I thought about that for years, but I just didn't say anything. You know that stuff. Moses complained, but he complained in prayer. Sometimes you and I go to God and we complain. I've complained. Lord, why have you made me deaf? I want to be a missionary. Those 14 years in Columbia were some of the best years of my life. Why did you bring me back to Milwaukee? But I complained to him. And it took me a couple of years to fight it through. Until I began to understand. So what took place is, God responded positively to Moses because Moses went directly to him. He responded negatively to Israel because all they did is complain to one another. And when people complain to one another, nothing is accomplished. Nothing's accomplished. Except more people complain. See? And more people bellyache and more people whine. So when these people complained to one another, it began to spread. So if you have some complaints, take them to God and be honest with them. Lord, I don't think you're fair. Lord, Moses said, why have you given me this responsibility and it's laying on my shoulders and I can't handle it? Take your complaints. Lord, why did you make me deaf? I don't think it's fair to have studied language, linguistics, phonetics, anthropology, and now be home back in Milwaukee. And I don't want to be here. In fact, I can quote the exact words I said in prayer. Lord, I don't want to be in the Plymouth Brethren full-time worker rat race. Filling my book and going. Wow. So if you have a complaint, take them to God. And be patient. Fight it out. This relationship, the job I wanted, the hard economic times, and this and that. Fight it out with God. But don't fight with one another. Don't share your complaints with others. If you go talk to people seeking advice, select the right kind of people. But don't be complaining. All right? So Moses took his complaint to God to solve his problem. And many of us are very good at complaining to each other. Many of us are good. I've spent my 31 years as an elder just sorting out complaint, because pretty soon things begin to get false. It's not true. And things are said, and pretty soon you're trying to sort it out. You're trying to say, look, the thing you just said, if you knew the half of it, you wouldn't say that. See, we know some things that you don't know, and we have to. And it takes a lot of sorting out. So we need to learn to take our problems to the one who can solve them. I said before that some complaining come from focusing on unfulfilled desires. That's got to be one of our biggest complaints. Unfulfilled desires. Dissatisfaction comes when our attention shifts from what we have to what we don't have. Let me say it again. It's important. Dissatisfaction comes when our attention shifts from what we have to what we don't have. Lord, I wanted that job. And I'm qualified. That person got the job, and I know that person just isn't qualified. Oh, Lord, by this time of life, I wanted to have a bigger house. I wanted to have a better job. I wanted to have a better car. I wanted to have more money. I don't know what it is. I wanted to have a more fruitful ministry. I wanted to have my book filled with conferences and things. I don't know. But what you have is this problem. When you shift your attention from what you have to what you don't have, you begin to complain. You begin to complain. I don't have this, Lord. I don't have that. And that creates complaining. And then you run to other people. Now, what the people of Israel didn't seem to notice is what God was doing for them. They only noticed what they didn't have. What was God doing? Setting them free. Wow. All the years under the whip of the slave masters, setting them free. And he was making a nation out of them. They're a scattered group of people related by blood, but they were just disorganized. And God's going to put them in a land, and he's giving them a high priesthood, and he's giving them a temple, and he's binding them together. And so he's making a nation out of them, and he's giving them a land. They weren't focused on what he was doing. And sitting down and looking at your life and saying, Lord, I remember when I was a believer, and I'm thankful that I am, and I'm thankful my sins are gone. And I'm thankful you love me and care for me. And no man, no woman, no politician will stand in your way if you have something for me. And this is important. So let me just say this then. He gave them a new land, and they were so wrapped up in what God wasn't giving them, they didn't see it. All they could think about was the delicious food in Egypt. Now, by the way, they probably did eat better. Pharaoh wasn't dumb. Pharaoh says, these guys got to work hard, so let's give them a good feed. Say, because if we don't give them a good feed, they won't be able to carry all the bricks. So they ate better in Egypt. No doubt about it. But in desiring to have that piece of filet with mushrooms and a little sauce and things, they forgot how the whip of the slave master hurt and the burden that they bore. Because God says in Exodus 7, I have heard the complaints of my people, and I have come to deliver them. They forgot. So they thought about the food they left behind, but they had forgotten how much it cost to have that food. One of the things I want to say this, before we judge the Israelite too harshly, what occupies your mind? What occupies your mind? What's on your mind? What are the things that you find cropping up during the day on your mind? Is it a dissatisfaction with God? Is it a dissatisfaction with the things you have? Think about it. What occupies your attention most of the time? And what's creating problems? Are you grateful for what God has given you? Are you always thinking about what you would like to have? All right. Always think about what you like to have. I do, of course, I like to have things. And but never, what's going on in your mind? You must sit when you read the word, and you've got to think this through. You've got to think it through. Moses was sharp. Others were sharp, and they could see almost immediately the motives. People understand the motives. Don't allow your unfulfilled desires to cause you to forget God's gifts. Life, food, health, salvation, work, friends. And thank God for them. So complaints come from focusing on unfulfilled desires. Another thing I said before is that complaints come from a lack of trust in God. Every morning the Israelites would walk out, open the tent flap, and there in the ground was this white, fluffy stuff. What is it? Manna, say. And they were to collect enough for the day. And it was boring. I suppose they might put a little honey in it and throw a few peanuts. But I look at it like eating oatmeal three times a day. I suppose throw a few raisins. Oatmeal three times a day would keep you alive. But pretty soon you really start getting a fancy for a piece of filet or a burger or a Big Mac or something. But it was just God provided it. And they opened them up. And the ground was covered with this white, fluffy manna, food from heaven. It was nothing special, but somehow it nourished them. And it gave them strong bodies. But it wasn't enough. They felt that they needed to have more. And again, they forgot what they already had. They didn't ask God to fulfill their need. Here's what they did. They demand it. I'm tired of this. I want more. They didn't ask. Lord, it would be nice to have some pocket money to go out once in a while and have ourselves whatever it is, or buy more, have more. They demanded. And the story, of course, is they demanded meat. They stopped trusting God to care for them. If we only had meat, and I mentioned before they got the meat, and while it was still in their teeth from chewing it, they got sick. They just had a plain lack of trust in God. But I must admit this, there are many, many things for them to learn. And what happened is, when this happened, they began to reminisce about the good old days in the world, back in Egypt. God gave them what they wanted, what they longed for, but they dearly paid for it. You know, God may give you, if you keep demanding something, he may give you what you want. But expect the consequences may cause you great hurt. Especially in relationships, especially in marriage and things. Be careful about demanding. God may just give you what you want. Go ahead. If you're not willing to trust me, go ahead. And you pay the consequences. When you ask God for something, he can grant the request. But if you reproach him with a sinful attitude, getting what you want may really prove costly. And that's what they did. They reproached him with a sinful attitude. Now let's go to Philippians chapter 2, please. Verse 14, most mainly. All right, Philippians 2, 14. Do all things without grumbling or disputing. Put them together. Grumbling means I'm not happy. Disputing means my relationship to somebody else. Not only am I grumbling, but I get out of sorts of other people, not that guy. See. Not that girl. Yeah. Not that person. So do all things without grumbling or disputing. Now, here's the reason why. Now, listen to this. Because in verse 15, it says that, okay, do all things without grumbling or disputing, that or because, so that you might be. The reason I don't want you to do these things is here's what I want of your life, right? That you may prove yourself to be blameless, innocent children of God, above reproach, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you appear as lights in the world. See? So the reason is simply this. When you complain and you grumble, somehow it reflects your life. And instead of being a light in the world, shining brightly for Christ, you're a poor testimony. And this is what I believe he says. What happens when we complain? First of all, when we complain, complaining harms others as well as ourselves. I have enough knowledge now. I'm not talking like a wise guy. I have enough knowledge now that I could walk into any assembly and within 6 months I could split it. I might even write a book. 20 principles in splitting an assembly. I could be pretty good at it, I think. I've walked around and learned around. There's some technique. Piece of cake. You start by grumbling about certain things and you pick out the right people and you start grumbling. And you pick and you grumble here and you grumble there. Pretty soon these people get all hepped up. Then they start grumbling. And next thing you know, you're sharpening your sword and you've got your fire. You want to go out there and beat them, whip them, defeat them. All right, so this is important to understand Philippians. Complaining harms others and as well as ourselves. So this is one of the reasons why it's so harmful. Sometimes when there's problems in a church, you might be surprised how it gets out. Somebody leaves in a rotten mood. And I have coffee with somebody else from another church. Well, how come you change churches? Oh, nice guys. Ah, okay. And word spread, people. See, word spread. And it gets out. You'd be surprised. All right. So it's important to not complain, to grumble. Complaining, arguing, and gossip give a false impression of what Christ can do and who he is. Belief in Christ ought to unite us. And if people are always complaining and arguing, it lacks unifying power of the Spirit. Our lives should be characterized by moral purity, by unity, by peacefulness. Now let me read something here from my favorite morning devotion. I could do this and not name his name, but Oswald Chambers. I know a lot of people have a hard time with Ozzy. I know him so well, I feel I can call him Ozzy. Oswald Chambers. Been reading him every day for 21, 22 years. Here's what he says. July 16th. Jesus urges us to keep our minds filled with the concept of God's control over everything, which means that a disciple must maintain an attitude of perfect trust with an eagerness to ask God and to seek his advice. Before we learn this attitude, Chambers said, we of divine control, we used to run from person to person, talking, complaining, right? But now that we have this, we go to God about it. Is God control of everything? Continues on. At times, God will appear like an unkind friend. You go to a friend, and you're sure this friend to help you, and this friend says, I can't do anything. I'm not going to do it. I can't. Sometimes he's like an unkind friend. Why won't he give me that now? Why won't he give me that loan? Why won't he help me now? But he is not. Or he appears like an unnatural father, as if he's not our father, just an unnatural father. But he is not. He loves us and cares for us. Or an unjust judge. Keep the thought that the mind of God is behind all things in your life and all things that are strong and growing. So that's July 16th, Oswald Chambers. Their complaints came simply because they couldn't trust God. Father, thank you for your word. We read the Old Testament and it's filled with stories. And when we pay attention to people, their motives, what makes people tick, when we pay attention to how people react under stress, when we pay attention how people react when they don't have what they want, when we pay attention to people who have who've gotten what they wanted but have lost your approval, we learn something about humanity and about ourselves and about sin. Father, if we struggle, we want to struggle with you. Struggling with you is not bad. Complaining to you is not wrong. Give us the patience to see it through. We pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.